Thank you for listening to Ivy Podcast, where we feature weekly leadership conversations with thought leaders and industry experts. Now, here is your host, John Karsibayev.
My name is Joe Gross. I'm the president of CIO Partners.
Joe, thanks so much for making time joining us on the Ivy Podcast today. Before we jump in and talk more about the CIO Partners, which I'm very excited about to have that conversation with you, give us a thumbnail version of your career today.
Sure. Yeah, so I am originally from the Northeast. I'm born in Philly, grew up in New Jersey, went to New Jersey Institute of Technology in the mid to late 90s, finished up there and ended up taking a role as a technical recruiter. I had no idea what that was back then, but took that role and then grew with a company that was kind of opening up offices up and down the East Coast and helped them open up an Orlando, Florida location as a technical recruiter, then opened up Jacksonville. Then moved to Atlanta, Georgia with the same company to take an account management role where I was managing large Fortune 500 accounts for the company. At that point, then switched gears a little bit. RPO was a hot topic back in, I guess it was the late 90s, early 2000s. And I joined a company called HR Works where we did recruitment process outsourcing on a large scale for Fortune 500 companies and ended up progressing with that company to actually leading both operationally as well as from a business development standpoint. Then I transferred out of really recruiting and staffing altogether. I actually moved into an information management company called Recall. Recall was the number one competitor to Iron Mountain. Iron Mountain eventually ended up acquiring Recall. And at that point, I had had a good relationship with our founder, Mike Burgett, the founder of CIO Partners. And he strategically, being the good recruiter that he was, reached out to me upon that purchase. And he had tried to hire me actually a few years earlier, and we agreed it just wasn't the right time. Mike was looking to get out of the day-to-day of executive search in technology and needed somebody to kind of run that day-to-day. So we agreed at that point, that was 6 years ago. I took over as his COO for CIO Partners, and then a couple years later took over the presidency role, which I hold now. Responsibilities today obviously include the entire firm. So everything from our front end client relationships to our candidate relationships and then marrying them up at the end.
Well, that's super exciting. And thank you for providing that, the insight into your career, which is very diverse. And you've had kind of almost that trajectory from a technical recruiter growing up through the ranks from that perspective, and then now leading the organization that's, is a thought leader in the space of executive search, especially comes from a technology perspective. So when it comes to where you guys are at right now as CIO Partners, obviously you've been in the industry for quite some time. You've seen market go through all different cycles, different iterations.
Yes.
Share with us some thoughts around what are the different trends you're seeing in this current condition markets? What are some of the predictions? What's the research for Joe is looking like these days?
Yeah. So, well, first I'll talk a little bit about, I think, kind of what's exciting in our industry, right? And then I can talk about some specific trends surrounding technology leadership that we're seeing. But, exciting in our industry is obviously we are close partners with our clients. And I think what's exciting that we see is how our clients are adapting, right? The adaptation already started, and we can talk pre-COVID, right? So that adaptation was starting to happen. When we look at, who was the number one hotel, right? This is pre-COVID. Well, it was Airbnb and VRBO, right? They passed the traditional hotels. Who was the number one transportation company? Well, it became Uber and Lyft, right? They passed taxis and car services. Who was the number one retailer, Amazon, right? So all these things were already starting to adapt. And I think what COVID did was just accelerate that adaptation through not only all those companies I just mentioned, their competitors. So what did that mean for us? It means we had to adapt, candidates had to adapt, and it created really a lot of opportunity over the last 2 to 3 years. So we've seen our activity pick up immensely. I'm embarrassed to admit that 2020 was our largest year ever, but it was. And it was because of that, right? Because of that adaptation that's happening in the industry. When you talk specific to recruiting and process, what's exciting? I mean, things like video and technology obviously have become really big. They were starting to replace the resume, right? Now they have completely replaced it, right? So everything we do is video based. And then you factor in, well, a lot of the things that technology companies and all companies are looking at is the use of data, right? And artificial intelligence and that kind of technology, and be able to use that data to become better at what you do. So that's happening in the recruitment industry as well. That said, I will say, and I always kind of conclude with this, that our industry there's a human factor and it will always be there. So even though, the use of AI and the use of, data management tools and those kinds of things to lead you to better decisions, yes, it may narrow it, but at some point, the one-on-one human interaction that happens in our industry still has to happen. It just may happen through different means. So I think those are some of the trends that we see that's kind of exciting in our industry and is what leading to fast change and leading to more roles for us to work on.
Yeah, very insightful. As you partner with organizations of various size that are looking to expand or enhance their technology executive team, in other areas of the company. So I would imagine that one of the first initial strategies is to take a deeper dive into just overall culture of their organization, who is at the leadership, and then try to match that to some of the candidates that you source and you try to partner with. So as you collaborate, as you kind of, in between, you collaborate with both sides of the equation, when it comes to helping your best client companies build and foster that culture of innovation through exceptional, technology executives, what are some of the strategies that really help you accomplish that? Share with us any of the practical recommendations.
Yeah, I mean, it's a challenging one, and it's really, there are certain folks that are just going to lean towards innovation. They are curious in nature. So uncovering that talent, right, within a person's profile is extremely important. So I think hiring curiosity and then allowing that curiosity to own something and okay to fail with whatever they own, right? So you have to have that philosophy. So you can make it, you can make innovation part of your core competencies, your core values, your pillars of success. All these companies we have them here, right? And innovation is in there. But if you don't empower people to go ahead and take a chance, fail, learn from that failure, and then try again, you can say you're an innovative company, but if you don't allow people to do that, it's not going to work, right? So what I want to hear when we're talking to candidates and evaluating, are they innovative? I want to hear about those failures, right? People are, you put on a resume, you're putting all your success down, right? And it's a laundry list and a timeline of success you've had over your career. I'd rather hear about what you failed at, what you tried and didn't do, or learned that it's just not going to work and you had to pivot and make a change, right? So those kinds of things and that line of questioning, I think, is important, not only when we work with candidates, but when our clients get to them eventually.
Right, absolutely. As I talk to a lot of executives as well in all different types of organizations, and it's always interesting, especially in the current, you know, times that we're all in. I always get the question of, you know, John, you talk to executives of very different companies. How are they structuring their organizations when it comes to, you know, the hybrid model, fully remote, or try to bring folks back onto, you know, physical environments? So I, you know, can't help but, you know, ask you that question as well. What are the different, you know, trends that you have been seeing as part of your client companies? Maybe what has worked well for them, what has not, when it comes to really kind of adapting to the current conditions, but at the same time remaining very nimble and agile to be able to, you know, adapt to for what's coming next.
Right.
Share any thoughts from that perspective?
Yeah, sure. So obviously we're seeing an increase in remote work. We're seeing an increase in, not right now, travel, but I would expect travel to come back and come back quick. And the reason for that is I think companies, for the most part, have been very flexible on hiring new talent, understanding that maybe they're in a location where the talent pool is not rich, so they're okay with going to other locations, but you know, they want that person to be open to travel in and out of locations as needed. I do think, though, and this is consistent among everybody, leaders need to be present, right? So whether that's present physically or present through the use of technology, right, which we've seen huge increases in, you know, we're doing a Zoom call today, right? So Zoom and Teams and Slack, communication avenues within your CRM, those kinds of things, like if you use Salesforce, the chatter function, right? All these things are now being used and being used prominently. So, you know, do I think at the end of COVID or post COVID, if we're in that section now, that companies will be more flexible? Yes. But I do believe, and all of the clients that we work with also believe, leaders need to be present. I think, you know, companies fell into three categories, right? Culturally, they are a one city headquarter, right? And they want everybody to be from that city, and they want everybody to be proud of that city. And they have a lot of linkage, right, to that community. And then you have folks that, yes, they have that, but they're kind of okay, right? Because maybe they're a retailer or something that has multi-locations. So somebody would be able to work out of another location. And then you've got companies that, you know, we're okay with going completely remote, right? And they hired talent wherever that talent sat, and they were ahead of the game. I don't think we'll shift all the way to the left, right? I don't think we'll shift all the way back to, hey, you've got to be in the corporate headquarters, nor do I think we're going to shift all the way to the right where it is 100% remote. I think people are yearning to get back, right? Yearning for that human interaction, as I mentioned before. I think it's important. I think it's critical. In our organization, we are all in Atlanta, although, you know, only about 10% of our searches over the last 2 years are in Atlanta, right? But I have my whole project team here. So, you know, I think it promotes success, it promotes teamwork, and those kinds of things are still very important.
So we've briefly touched upon the, you know, you being in the middle, kind of representing the both sides of the equation. When it comes to interviewing, it's such an interesting space because I'm yet to see anyone to be really, really consistently good at that, because it's a combination of art and the science, and it's very difficult space to master. And one trend that I have been observing, it's a lot of the interviews are based on that, you know, past experience, which I think is very flawed. Versus, you know, hiring for strength instead of kind of what is the weakness that we can tolerate in that particular candidate.
Right.
Curious to get your thoughts on, as you prepare both sides, you know, the hiring organization and your candidates for that very first interview, what are some of the strategies that really help you improve your, you know, increase your batting average as you set these expectations and you go through that, but there's a lot of variables that are outside of your control. Right. Curious to get your thoughts from that perspective.
Yeah, it's a great question. I think you hit on the first part, right? Background and experience. I can see that on LinkedIn. I can see it in your resume. I don't need 30 minutes of you walking me through everything that you did up till now, right? We'll hit those things, but I think we'll hit those things through situation, action, result, right? And that's really where you need to spend your time. That background and experience, I think it is important to get a candidate talking, right? And as a candidate, you should have that elevator speech down, but it should be 30,000 foot view, 5 minutes or less. Here's how I got to where I am in my career today, right? Okay, then move on, right? You know, I like to get into things like, what are things in their daily job that they love doing? Conversely, what are things in your daily job that you hate doing? So this gives you an early look, about, you know, where people thrive, where people like to spend their time. If you are, not a analytical person, right? And data is not your thing. Well, then reviewing reports and all that kind of stuff. And that may not be your thing, right? But maybe you're more of a creative, right? Relationship builder. Those are the things that drive you and you thrive in. Then, so I'm trying to find out from the person what they love in their everyday work, and what they hate, right? And I hate the word hate, but it is what you go, it's part of my responsibilities. I got to do it, but I don't like doing it, right? And then there's other things that they just love doing. It tells you a lot about the person and how they might be successful in one organization versus another, because each organization is going to have a need based on that position profile. I think the other thing I get into a lot is companies measure people different ways, right? And I want to make sure every candidate that we talk to understands how they're measured, right? And how are they doing against that measurement? And I'm doing that if I'm hiring somebody, and I'm doing that and helping our clients hire folks, right? You better have a clear understanding of how you're measured, right? And then how are you doing to those goals, both the company goals and the personal goals, right? So, just think about it from a sales position, right? Okay, well, I hit my quota every year. Well, great. You hit the company goals. Is that where you want to be? No, I have personal goals. Okay, well, how did you do to those? If they don't know, that tells me a lot about the person, right? So, that getting into those kinds of things, I think are much more important in an interview process than, going into why is there a 3-month gap in your employment? You should be able to tell me that in your quick elevator speech about how you got there. But I'm not diving into every detail throughout your resume.
Yeah, that's very interesting, and it's it's also an opportunity, I would imagine, also at the executive level as well, for the hiring committee to create that two-way street of a conversation that also provides the candidate with an opportunity to make the assessments themselves, ask the right questions as well, and try to make a determination if this is the right environment, or is this the right type of leadership board that I would thrive under as an executive leading let's say a technology division of the company. So those are very interesting dynamics that comes along with the territory of interviewing. I'm pretty sure you and I can spend the rest of the podcast talking about that particular.
That's good. Yeah.
Cause it's very fascinating. In terms of kind of the role of the CIO that, has, almost transformed through the last couple of years, being that strategic partner, being that, the consultative seat at the board where you are almost taking the lead on the direction and the strategy of the organization alongside with the other members of the executive committee. Share with us your thoughts on where do you see the role of the CIO, the CTO going next? What are some of the areas that could be improved, and just overall kind of the state of the role of the CIO?
Yeah, so good question. You are absolutely right. CIOs are much, much more aligned with the business than they have been in the past. They all now have a seat at the table, right? 5 years ago, we couldn't necessarily say that. Now it's 100% true, right? And that's whether you're a technology company or not. CIOs, although they will have a technical upbringing at some point, not all of them, but most of them will, they've probably removed themselves from the day-to-day technical operations, right? They've hired well around them for that, right? They may have a CTO, they may have a VP group that handles those functional areas of IT, and they really are aligned with the business. We're seeing more and more CIOs stepping into COO roles, right? Stepping into CEO roles. So that is happening more and more. We're seeing a ton more opportunities for CIOs at the board level, right? So not only do boards want to have that technical perspective because that's the future and that's the way their company has had to adapt, that therefore they're leaning on CIOs to be on their boards to provide that kind of information, not only from a technical perspective, but nowadays from a security perspective as well. That's becoming huge, and that generally falls to the CIO, not always, but oftentimes it does. CIO trends post-pandemic, agility, right? I think what everybody learned is, can we pivot? Can IT pivot with the business if the business has to shift? So I think that's a big piece. The customer, putting the customer first and prioritizing what those customer experiences are has become really important for CIOs to now just not meet the needs of the business, but understand beyond the needs of the business, understand the customer and how IT affects them. Financial efficiency, that's another big one, right? So, I think what everybody did, at the beginning of COVID was we did it here, right? Take a hard look at expenses. We don't know what's going to happen. We don't know where this is going to go. So I think the IT organizations that did that and did that well set themselves up for where we are today so that they can either begin to continue to invest in IT, right? Or reinvest in IT now that, okay, we survived, right? Let's go forward. So I think that becomes, a really big responsibility now of the CIO, where in the old days when the CIO reported to the CFO, the CIO just asked for money, right? And the CFO would have to justify, where that money's coming from and why it needs to go there. I think health management, right? Healthcare and health management, right, has become huge in post-pandemic world. So not only the health of the healthcare industry, but health of your employees, right? And those kinds of things. And IT has become really a conduit between leadership and employees throughout this and making sure that employees are okay, right? So I think health and healthcare is just on everyone's agenda. So it better be on the CIO's agenda.
Right, absolutely. No, I love the, how you compartmentalize from different, almost pillars. As far as the role and the vision and where direction of the role of the CIO that's going. The other component that I've also found fascinating is the CIOs that are extremely well connected in their space with, obviously technical expertise, leadership capabilities are amazing and utmost importance, but also in this day and age to help the company grow and scale, also comes with the territory as well as a technology leader, leveraging those connections, yeah, helping the company grow. I think I've seen some extremely successful technology executives that are able to, partner with a sales division and say, I know the technology executive at this company, I'm happy to make that introduction. So it's just been an interesting dynamic, especially coming out of pandemic. As far as you doing the research, obviously you consume a lot of information to stay ahead of the curve in terms of where the industry is going and things like that. Share with us your content diet. What are the different sources you consume on a daily basis that really help you stay ahead of the curve?
Yeah. So a couple of things here. First, I want to just kind of piggyback on what you just talked about, which is being well networked, right? And self-branding and those kinds of things. And we're affiliated with what's called the CIO Professional Network, separate company from CIO Partners, but we advertise a lot in it. We share a lot of our roles within it. Those kinds of networks are important, whether they're local networks, right, for CIOs, industry-based networks, or global ones, as ours is, that has carved out, functional area, industry, and geographical location where they can, CIOs and CTOs and can kind of interact with each other. So I think that's extremely important to do. You've got to make time and find time to do it. Your next role is not going to come from something you see on Indeed, right? It's probably going to come from either relationships with firms like ours, right? Or relationships with fellow CIOs, right? And fellow C-suite executives. So I think that's really important to do. Content diet, you know, publications that I'm looking toward pretty regularly are, you know, well, I subscribe to The Hustle, I subscribe to Morning Brew, right, every day. So, you know, those kinds of things for the quick snippets that you want and what's going on in the world, I think those are important. From an industry perspective, there's a publication called the National CIO Review, which does a great job of highlighting CIOs, bringing up, you know, different issues that CIOs are dealing with. You know, a lot of content comes out. There's an early morning bite that comes out from the National CIO Review where you can, again, get those quick snippets. CIO Dive is another good one that folks, you know, could look into. And these are all ones that I use specifically, but there are others out there. But I think, you know, I use Pitch from a financial perspective. I use PitchBook News. Every day I find out what's going on in the world of private equity, because, you know, that's private equity is it's just very active right now. CIOs, those corporate CIOs would love to get into private equity situations because they get a lot more variety in what they do and those kinds of things. So we have a lot of success in partnering with private equity firms and their portfolio companies. So for those reasons, I'm looking at PitchBook. You know, if you're a technology leader, I would want to know what's going on as well, because with all these changes happening from a private equity and investment standpoint, those changes usually, the change, you know, what follows that change is usually a C-suite executive change, right? So you want to be on the forefront and know what's going on if that's where you want to take your career.
I love what you said at the very beginning from a relationship standpoint. And I actually made a post on LinkedIn a couple of weeks ago, which resonated with so many people. It goes within the lines of, the best job is not always posted and the best candidate is not always looking. Yeah. And in a sense, you know, I truly believe that, because for me, you know, personally, a lot of the great opportunities career-wise or business-wise have always been something that's, you know, really relationship driven, something from the network, something that's, you know, if I've engaged with somebody or helped somebody. So it definitely resonates on so many levels, what you've talked about. As far as your, you know, the book that you're currently reading, share with us that. And is there a book that you always recommend to others, and why is that?
Gosh, I would go a throwback book to Who Moved My Cheese. I think that's like the, you know, it's the, and the 1 Minute Manager. They've kind of been baselines for my career as a leader. I am not, I'll be honest with you, you know, from a book standpoint, maybe it's my ADD, I don't know, but I'm not the one that's gonna read a novel. I'm gonna read those snippets that we talked about. If I am reading a book, generally I focus on biographies and autobiographies of people that I respect, right? So I most recently read Warwick Dunn's biography, right? Warwick Dunn was a running back for Florida State and then eventually the Falcons and the Tampa Bay Buccaneers, and huge contributor back to the community with his home building that he's done throughout the Southeast. So it's people like, and if you know anything about his background, you know, basically raised, you know, a huge family after losing mom and dad pretty early. So, you know, I always focus on people that I respect, whether that's in or out of industry. If they have an autobiography or a biography written about them, I'm going there and that interests me. Generally, I read to get away from work. So I'll read more for enjoyment, you know, Sports Illustrated and those kinds of things.
Great. I love those recommendations. And for our listeners, we'll make those titles and recommendations available in the show notes. Joe, I can't thank you enough for your time today. Very short, insightful conversation. I personally learned quite a bit. What I love doing with a lot of my guests is doing a follow-up episode in about a year, revisit the conversation from a year ago, see everything that you and I had discussed, and if that still makes sense. So I definitely love doing that. I'm looking forward to doing that with you.
I'd be happy to.
Thank you for listening to the Ivy Podcast. Be sure to subscribe to our RSS feed on ivypodcast.com and all major podcasting platforms like Spotify and iTunes. As always, if you enjoyed this podcast, please give us a rating on iTunes.